board up on that.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. That's the phone number for you to call us to talk about the NFL draft and New York Giants football. Not a whole lot of new stuff going on this week, but now we are within the two-week period. In fact, we're 8 days away from the 2017 NFL draft, and we'll be having a number of guests over the past 8 or 9 days to get you ready for it. We'll be joined by Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus in a couple minutes to give his take and Pro Football Focus's take on some of the guys coming out in the draft and trying to see how things have changed as we've moved along in this draft process. And, Paul, you know, we talked about how mock drafts don't mean anything. A lot of the stuff out there is noise. This is when some of the stuff that gets out there might actually be true, and you can start paying attention because guys have been set now on draft boards around the league,
right?
And teams have made some determinations on how they value players in comparison to others.
Well, I think even more important, at least there's a little bit more medical information than they had a month ago.
Correct.
Not complete. Let's make that very clear. Not everybody has a complete medical portfolio on every player, but they knew more than they did in February. And that's important because, let's face it, I know with the Giants and with some other teams too, the medical people get the first say. Because if the medical people red flag a player and they say, look, this is a problem. We don't think he can hold up. We think he's going to need surgery pretty quickly. And his career's lifespan may not be as much as you'd like because this will be a continuous problem we got to deal with. That just changes everything for a team. So that, to me, is probably the most important factor that we're talking about today as opposed to a prospect who went to the combine.
And, of course, a very busy week as well here at the facility. Tomorrow we'll hear from Giants general manager Jerry Reese. He'll talk about what the Giants would do in the draft this year. We'll see if he actually mentions a prospect's name over the course of his 15 minute to half an hour press conference.
You're gonna pry it out of him like a dentist?
The classic expression, he will hold the cards close to his vest and not give anything up. The media will try to glean something from Jerry Reese. And, of course, he'll have the first chance to talk about what the Giants have done in free agency as well. Guys like Red Ellison, bringing back Jason Pierre-Paul. And we haven't heard from Jerry Reese since those moves got made, since he wasn't out at the combine.
Yeah, I think, to me, that will probably be the most enlightening things that Jerry Reese has to talk about in terms of the pursuit of these free agents, the guys they landed, and how they fit in what the Giants are proposing to do this season, because we haven't had that opportunity to do that. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I think everybody across the board, John, from here to California, seems to believe that the Giants at this point have set themselves up very well.
Yeah, no question about it. And, of course, we'll see how the Giants' free agency moves will affect what they do in the NFL draft as well. If you're watching on Twitter, thank you for joining us. If you want to watch the rest of the show, including our interview with Steve Palazzolo, make sure you go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app right now. And now we welcome in from Pro Football Focus, one of their lead analysts, Steve Palazzolo. And Steve, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino. We haven't spoken since the combine. I hope everything's going well with you, man.
Going well. I've missed you guys. It has been a while.
Yes. And, well, you guys have been busy. I'm holding up your draft package right now. You guys release four versions of this. This is version three. I printed it out at the office this morning. Your next version will come out, I believe, on Monday, if I'm not mistaken, Steve. Why don't you tell the folks what they get with the draft guide, with the Pro Football Focus draft pass, how they get it, and the type of work you guys put into it.
Yeah, they get everything you've ever wanted for the draft. This entire draft class, over 1,000 players have some sort of information or stats in there, 250 player profiles, our three-year grading, my favorite, the spider chart, which gives you a nice quick glimpse of each guy's skill set, Senior Bowl practice stats, which literally you can't find anywhere else. We were the only ones who were there at the Senior Bowl actually charting every single rep at the Senior Bowl. Everything you need for the draft, and I've been charged with giving a $5 discount to your listeners. So if you guys use promo code PFFSteve at profootballfocus.com/draftpass17, you get $5 off. So I think it's a pretty good deal and everything you need leading up to the draft.
Now, Steven, you get more than just a draft guide too, right?
Yeah, so it's a downloadable PDF. You can also go right to profootballfocus.com, go to our draft section. We have our top 250, our big board. Click on a player, and you get all these unbelievable stats right there on the web as well.
Now, the one thing I want to follow up on, you mentioned your spider charts, and that, and the chart kind of breaks down each guy in terms of some of your specific statistics that really only Pro Football Focus has. How much have you guys used some of the spider charts in terms of combine performance? Are you guys working on how you integrate those numbers into performance? Because I'm sure you guys are trying to figure out a way to calibrate those and use those in your evaluation, but obviously it's a very tough thing to do analytically.
Yeah, it's one thing that we're getting into a little bit more. Right now we'll eyeball it a little bit and say, okay, look, this guy looks athletic on tape, and he was athletic at the combine. That's great. When guys don't necessarily match up to what they did on tape, I think it raises some red flags, and it adjusts our evaluations a little bit. So it's absolutely a big factor, but still the majority of our evaluations are going to be, how did this guy play on tape, and how does it look like? Based off everything we're seeing, how does it look like that's going to translate to the next level?
You know, Steve, I remember when we had you on at the Combine in Indianapolis, and one of the guys who was really creating a lot of buzz and anticipation was going to be David Njoku, the tight end out of Miami, who everybody thought was going to blow up the Combine with all of his numbers and all of the skill tests that they ran him through. And it turned out he didn't quite do that. Yet the luster and shine on his star still seems to be very high. Would he be one of the guys who, I don't want to say disappointed, but did he really lose much as a result of what happened out there? Because the expectations were off the charts.
Yeah, probably a touch. But I think, you know, what you see on tape is a very athletic player who runs and moves like a wide receiver. In draft pass, you can see that he averaged 11.2 yards after the catch per reception last year, which is incredible. A lot of that came on screens, but, you know, he makes plays all over the field. So it may have lost a little bit of the shine because I think people expected domination. But, again, I think I go back to the tape and I see a guy that, whether he lines up in line, in the slot, he can create mismatches. And, you know, O.J. Howard is acknowledged as the top tight end in the draft, but I think Njoku's number two and certainly in that late first-round mix.
Well, the only reason I bring that up is because it seemed to me that going out to Indy, there were some people who thought that Njoku, if he did blow up at the combine, might even pass Howard on some people's boards. At least that's what we had heard. Of course, that did not happen. I just wondered if that was much of a surprise to you. That's all.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I had heard the same rumblings, but it's one of those things where I think I heard some rumblings that came true. The rumblings that don't come true, I think that happens every year at the combine, and you just kind of like let the pieces fall, and that's just where he ended up.
You know, Steve, and I think one player that's interesting to me, and I'm sure you're going to be on the same page with me on this because you guys do most of your grading by the tape, which is the right way to do it, by the way, is Dalvin Cook. And I feel like the combine did scare some people off on him because his numbers, I think, were in the bottom 15 or 20 percentile in terms of all the running back skills that people look for. But if you look at how he played at Florida State, I mean, besides some fumbling issues, the guy did everything. And it's hard to argue he wasn't the best running back in college football last year. You know, do you think his drop here is real? Is he going to get into the 20s? Is that where he's heading right now?
I think his drop is real, and it's in part because of the combine. I think there's also just general off-field rumblings that people have some concerns. But I think on the field, man, you know, he didn't look like a great athlete at the combine, but on the field he does. He maintains his speed so well. You know, he looked like the fastest player on the field every time he was playing. So no matter what the 40 time set or the broad or the vertical jumps or whatever it may have been, you know, he was a game changer off field for 3 years at Florida State. A guy that I always make the point, usually when you're making those fourth quarter comebacks, when you're down, it's the quarterback. You know, it should have been Jameis Winston at Florida State. It's actually Dalvin making these comebacks year after year. He would take over games like nobody I've ever seen at the running back position. Just has a great feel for the position. So, look, I think he's going to be an outstanding running back, but I think the concerns are real because you just want him, like I said, you want him to back up the tape. I wanted him to run 4.35 like he looked on the field. I wanted to see that, and I think the NFL certainly has some concerns between that and some of the off-field.
Can I stay on offense if I can here, Steve? I want to talk about two positions and a two-part question. When we came out of Indy, John and I, we came back here, and the first thing we shared to ourselves was, boy, the top shelf for those offensive linemen, not as top shelf as so many years past. In fact, it may be the weakest top shelf offensive tackle group that we've seen in a decade. We didn't necessarily feel that going in, but we certainly got it from talking to folks like you and everybody else at the Combine in Indianapolis. So I want to ask you about the drop-off of the offensive tackles as a whole, because it does seem like they lost something. And then the quarterbacks, who nobody really thought was a great top-shelf class, but then as we're getting closer to the draft, you hear about so many teams who are desperate for a quarterback. I mean, I had someone this morning, I heard it on NFL Network, it might have been Bucky Brooks, said five of them are going in the first
round.
That's
crazy.
Which doesn't make any sense to me based on what we saw on tape.
Everybody wants a quarterback. Somebody's got to take somebody. The quarterbacks are going to go. I'll talk about that in a second. Listen, the tackles, they are bad. We have one first-round grade on an offensive tackle. It's Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin. We have him at number 22 currently on our draft board. Like him quite a bit. He can make all the blocks in the run game, solid in pass protection, but only 1 year of FBS action at Wisconsin, but he showed extremely well. I do think there's a drop-off after that. I know Garrett Bowles has been linked as a first-rounder and a guy that gets linked to the Giants quite a bit. He could make it. I think my big concern is, you know, the same mentality that offensive line coaches love about him. He wants to crush people in the running game, bury them in the dirt. I think that was his exact quote while we were hanging out at the combine.
It was.
That same aggressiveness, it kind of gets the better of him in pass protection. Sometimes he'll get too aggressive and whiff on too many blocks. So if he could tie up his pass protection, and that's a big if, then he evolves into maybe a first-round type of player. And I think Cam Robinson from Alabama, another guy who just looks the part, looks like a first-rounder, never played up to his potential at Alabama. If he gets the right coach that gets the best out of him, maybe something comes of it. But big question mark with the entire offensive tackle class. And then I say for, you know, the quarterbacks, I think a lot of this is just, look, people know that other teams are going to make moves for quarterbacks if they're desperate. So I think a lot of that is hype. People aren't hyping up the offensive tackle class because nobody's going to trade up for them. People are hyping up the quarterback class because there are trades to be made in part. And then the other part is, yeah, teams are desperate for quarterbacks and they will go make moves. And I think this quarterback class is extremely talented. I think the more you talk to evaluators, the more we see on tape, it's not so much that they can't do things. It's that we haven't seen them do certain things. You know, what Deshaun Watson doesn't work the pocket that well, doesn't go through progression. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what he was asked to do at Clemson. I don't know if that's something that he can evolve to at the next level. Mitch Trubisky, just the 1 year of work. Patrick Mahomes, so talented, but a moldable piece of clay because he's got he's coming from a system and a style, his own style, that's sure. So off the cuff, right? So there's a lot of upside to these quarterbacks, and I think you talk to any coach, you know, they'd like to have these guys to develop them, and it's probably going to take a first rounder to get a lot of them.
You know, I think to build off that comment, Steve, what happens is when you have a position or a group of players that requires so much of a projection instead of evidence, which is what you're talking about, That makes guys real nervous and really, really tentative about, oh, am I going to put my neck out on the line and say he can project to do X, Y, and Z at our level? It increases the margin for error to such a degree that there's going to be trepidation, at least with some people. With others, the desperation is going to take over, and they're going to say, we just have to get that guy.
Yeah, I think that's a huge factor. I think it gets more difficult every year, too, with I hate being the spread offense guy, but it is true. There's a more difficult translation to the NFL if the NFL doesn't adjust to the college game. I think the NFL has to do a better job there. I think the other thing is there's four quarterbacks, and if you look at any other draft analyst, some people have Trubisky at the top, some people have Deshaun Kaiser, yep. Some people have Mahomes,
it's
some
true.
People have Watson. If that's happening in the draft community, you can only imagine if what's happening on 32 different unique draft boards. These guys are all over the place. So Somebody might love Watson in the top five, and other guys might think that he's a second-round pick. So quarterbacks can go high because it takes that one team to consider him a first-round pick.
Steve, another premium position. We're joined by Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. Defensive line, defensive end, edge rushers specifically. Obviously, teams need pass rushers, you know, the way you neutralize a great quarterback is to get after and make him uncomfortable. Where do you think the big drop-off happens here at the defensive end position? Because I think, like quarterback, you know, I see some people have Charles Harris as a mid-first. Some people have him as a late second. McKinley is a top 12 pick. Other people have him in the, you know, early second round. And I think, you know, these pass rushers, you go from, you know, Harris all the way down to, you know, Derek Rivers. I see guys all over the place, rounds 1 through 3. How do you tier this position out, and where do you think the big drop-offs happen?
Yeah, it's a great question. We have a big chunk of them in our top 100, so I think there's still a lot of talent to be had in the second, third, fourth rounds, but I'd say it's probably about 10 or 11 deep that I feel these guys are at least at the least, back end of the first round type of players. So I think it's a very deep class. I mean, edge rushers and cornerbacks, they make up 38 out of our top 100 players right now. It is a great draft 38? To get after the quarterback and to stop the pass. And edge rushers are key. I think there's up to 10 potential first-round picks in this draft.
Who would surprise listeners, Steve, for who you have in your, top 10 and who you don't have in your top 10?
Well, I think people might be surprised that we have Solomon Thomas at 10 because he's getting a lot of hype as far as – we have him at 10 overall, number 3 among our edge defenders.
Okay.
He's getting a lot of top 5 type of hype. I think Carl Lawson, he's a guy that we have in the first round as our 14th overall player. He's not getting first-round hype. I'm actually surprised by that. I don't know why that's the case. Beyond that, I don't think there's a ton of surprises. Joe Mathis is a guy that we're extremely high on. We have him at 11. He was on his way to being one of the most productive edge rushers last year at Washington before getting hurt. We have him at number 46 on our overall board, right next to Takaris McKinley out of UCLA. And McKinley's a guy that we're probably a little bit lower on. I think the combine was a guy that skewed it a little bit for us. He was very productive. The combine was a little concerning in a couple of areas, and we did apply that to his evaluation. He gets pushed down, I think, in a deep edge rush class.
Steve, I want to follow one more on the edge rushers. One guy that I'm fascinated by is Paul and I talked to a guy who covers Utah out there, and he said so many good things to us about Hunter Dimmick. You look at his numbers, they're off the charts. I mean, you want productivity in college, Hunter Dimmick has him off the charts. You know, he played in a big conference out there in the Pac-12. Why do you think he doesn't get more attention? How do you guys see his production in college and how it might project to the pro level?
He was a huge combine snub. He was a guy that, if you just look at the PFF grades, and he graded unbelievably. He led the nation with 83 total pressures, and we're not saying he's the best edge rusher here because athleticism does matter at the next level, and that's where he's lacking. You at least have to invite this guy to the combine and see what he can do. So a huge snub. And he's not high on our board necessarily, but he's a guy that if you took him in the third or fourth round, I'd have no problem. I want this guy in camp. He never stops getting after the quarterback. He has an unbelievable chop move as a pass rusher. He's a bull rusher. He knows how to get after the quarterback. He took advantage of some weak Pac-12 tackles, but, man, he's a guy I just want in camp. So extremely strong, and as our guy Mike Renner, who's been on the show before, he did the breakdown on him. He just said a very unique body type and style and player. There's not a pure comparison for him in the NFL, and maybe that's a part of why the NFL has been scared of him. But a guy, I just want to see what he can do at the next level because I think some of it's going to translate.
I'm glad you brought him up, John, because I certainly wanted to hear Steve's take on him. I wanted to ask you a little bit more of a generic question, Steve. That is, after the combine and after the bulk of the pro days, was there a guy that you guys as a staff went back and said, we really need to double check what we did on him because he looks like he's moved a lot because of the combine and the pro days. We want to make sure that we got these numbers right.
Yeah, I think there's always a few guys. Another edge rusher to look at is Terrell Basham from Ohio. I thought the more we dug into his tape, the thing about these edge rushers, so many of them produced at a similar level, and then it's a matter of how do you sort them out. And Basham was a guy, when we went back and watched his tape, saw a lot of translatable skills in him, never stops getting after the quarterback. He could bull rush too, similar to Dimmick, and just straight line burst and speed was very impressive. So he impressed us a little bit at the Senior Bowl, and then that carried over to just more tape study when we really dug into it. So I thought Basham from Ohio is that mid-round edge rusher that we pretty well.
Similar question I asked about the DN, Steve, on the cornerbacks. How do you tier those guys out? Where do you see the drop-off? How many? I know you mentioned you have 38 combined defensive line, defensive edge rushers, and cornerbacks in your top 100. But how many first-round, truly first-round-worthy cornerbacks are there? And if you want to get a guy to step in year one and play significant snaps for you, where should you commit your draft pick to finding a corner?
Man, so I think it's about 15 deep in the first two rounds. And that's where I just think pure value, 15, maybe a couple extra in the first two rounds alone. And then the NFL, I think what's really going to happen is some of those guys are going to drop. So you're going to start getting starters at corner in the third and fourth round. Same thing with the safety class. There are going to be safety starters to be had in the third and fourth round, multiple starters. Now, as far as the first round goes, I think this cornerback class went from a class where I thought maybe 7 or 8 could go in the first. And a lot of those guys I had pegged as first-round picks, it was a Tease Tabor from Florida. We have to consider the 4.740 that he ran. The tape was really good. but then you dig into it, you see some of the speed issues too, so we dropped him a little bit. Jordan Lewis from Michigan, think he's a first-round player, has some off-field concerns. Sidney Jones, first-round player from Washington, tears his Achilles and, you know, says he's going to be back, but it's still a question mark. So I think a lot of those corners slide down to the second round. I still think ultimately we might get five in the first, whether it's Marshawn Lattimore and Gerrion Conley, both from Ohio State, Marlon Humphrey from Alabama. I think there are guys that will go in the first, maybe Kevin King from Washington, the two Colorado guys, Arkello Witherspoon and Chidobe Awuzie. They're in that late first, second round mix, I'd say. So I think the cornerback position could be so varied on every board as well, because these guys all have different skills. Some of them are 6'1", 6'2", play press man coverage. Other guys are zone-heavy guys. But I think we'll see. If I had to guess, let's say five corners go in the first. But I think the second round, there's a ton of value at cornerback in this draft.
Steve, I'm getting whispers that some people think Conley from Ohio State might go ahead of Lattimore. Do you think that's realistic, or do you think that's people getting a little bit too ahead of themselves?
I've heard the whispers, but I've also seen people on the other end that say people have Conley as a second-round pick. We have him as a second-round pick, and he's a guy, again, if you have the draft pass and you have one of the best stats in draft passes, his passer rating against last year, best in the nation, 13.6, allowed 14 catches, but he got his hand on 11 passes, which is incredible. He did get bailed out a couple times where he got beat, and that's why his grade wasn't as top-notch as, say, a guy like Lattimore and some of these other guys. So I think Conley, for a man coverage team, a lot like Eli Apple, I think there's a fit in certain systems and other systems, not as much. I don't necessarily think he's better than Lattimore, but like I said, I think because there are questions about some of these other corners who are potential first round picks, especially Sidney Jones, I think that moves a guy like Conley up, who we have as a second rounder, but I would not be shocked if he was a top 15 type of guy.
Steve, if I may, I'm going to go back to running backs for just a second. I know John asked you about Cook earlier. But I'm going to go back to my favorite guy, John Sicca, hearing me talk about Perine. But here's the thing. Going into the combine, there seemed to be a little bit of a mixed reaction to him. Some guys were in his camp. Some guys were not in his camp. And then he goes and blows up the bench press at the combine. And since that time, I remember back in January, it looked like you might be able to get him in the fourth round. Now, everywhere I look, people are saying he's a second-round pick. It looks like he has universally jumped up on the board, even for people who may not be a big fan. What have you heard about Perine? What do you think about him now compared to maybe what you thought about him in January?
Yeah, so the running back value is going to be an interesting one. I think on one hand you have the league becoming pass heavy and all that fun stuff, the devaluation of the running back position. On the other hand, you have Ezekiel Elliott, what he did last year, coming in as the number four pick, providing value in the fact that a lot of these guys really do a lot in the pass game. So I'm fascinated to just see where the NFL slots these running backs. But I think Cook, McCaffrey, Fournette, first-round picks, Joe Mixon, a borderline first, second, depending on the morality of the NFL, I guess, is the way to put it, to depend on his stock.
Sure.
Because he's a first-round type of player, take away the off-field. Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt, the guys are in this mix. I think there might be a drop off in the second round. I think it might be top heavy for the running backs, and then a guy like Perine might be available in the third or fourth still. The questions for
I love you, Steve. I love you.
I'm sorry. Sorry. He's going to still be a third or fourth round pick. He just doesn't bring as much to the pass game as other guys, and I think the league's just going so pass heavy right now that guys like Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt, who do a little bit more, they're going to be valued a little bit higher.
No. You made me happy.
I just don't love him. That's third
round
pick. No.
You made me happy because I want him to be there in the third round for the Giants. You don't understand. I want him to be in the third round. I'm going to be.
Then he's still there for
you. Okay, Steve, you're the man.
But I'm telling you, there's eight guys on our board that are higher than him. You might want one of those guys instead.
I want a power back for this team. I want Natron Means the second, and I label him Perine. That's what I want, and I want him in the third round.
Comparison. I like that. I like that comparison.
All right, Steve. Sort through two linebackers for me. We had a guy that covered Vanderbilt on. We had a guy that covered Florida on. And assuming Hassan Reddick and Reuben Foster are both gone at 23 in the Giants pick, which I think is a safe assumption at this point. Sort through Davis and Cunningham for me. What they did in college, how you think they project and would fit in a defense like Steve Spagnuolo's.
Yeah, I like both players. I think with Cunningham, I mean, as far as watching film, yeah, this last week of the draft, my evaluations are over. I might just go rewatch the film of my favorite guys through the draft. Cunningham's one of them. Just love watching his film. Flies to the ball, loves taking on blockers, attacks blockers, beats them well with his hands, does a really nice job in coverage as well. I think he has the length and athleticism to be a playmaker in coverage. So he brings a lot to the table. The big question for him, linebackers have to tackle. He misses far too many. Tackles high. It shows up in the numbers. 34 missed tackles over the last two seasons for Cunningham. It's a big if, but if he ties that up, he is going to be an excellent player at the next level. Even if he does miss a few tackles, he still makes enough plays that I think he's worth a late first-round type of pick. And then Jarrad Davis, I follow Florida pretty closely as well, and this guy just, he flies to the ball from a pure athleticism standpoint. He just is a missile. He reminds me of a guy that could really be used offensively, maybe against the Dak Prescott. If you want to make sure that you're keeping a Dak Prescott, a Carson Wentz, a mobile quarterback in the pocket, have Jarrad Davis spy him because he will close on him as quickly as anybody in this draft. So I love what Jarrad Davis brings from a versatility standpoint. Excellent blitzer. Like him in short zones. I think he's a solid coverage player. He gets a little bit lost in the run game at times, but he works hard at it, that whole flying to the ball thing. He gets after it. So I think there's some technique issues to iron out with Davis. Leaves a few plays on the field, but I think he's also a playmaking linebacker in that late first, early second round type of mix.
Steve, one more from me, and I'm only going to do the fans a favor because in the last week or two, it seems like whenever I've been on the show, I've gotten a lot of Michigan fans calling up, and they want to know about those defensive linemen. Not necessarily Charlton, who everybody thinks is going to go real high, but when you look at Wormley and then Glasgow, a lot of people have been talking to me about, oh, I'd love to see the Giants get those guys, especially now that Jonathan Hankins has decided to sign with the Indianapolis Colts. You're grading value on those three linemen, not so much on Charlton, but the other two specifically.
Yeah, we have Taco as a late first type of guy, a lot of upside, and I could easily see that being even higher, you know, if he had a few more snaps to play with. And I always seem to be talking about Ryan Glasgow when I'm with you guys. Currently, we have Chris Wormley at 75 on our big board, and then Glasgow at 114. I think Wormley is quick off the ball, quick hands, essentially played defensive end quite a bit for them, but he's about 290-plus pounds, more of an interior penetrating type. There's not a lot of interior penetrators in this draft. I think he's right up there with maybe Caleb Brantley from Florida as a guy that you could just trust to get up the field and make plays. So I like Wormley quite a bit. I think Glasgow is a little bit better at holding the point of attack, just knows how to shed blocks, extremely productive. This was one of those things when you got to our PFF page and you looked at the Michigan defensive line, just by looking at the names and the grades, it was tough to sort them out because for the last 2 years, they were all incredible.
Yeah.
It was Taco, and it was Glasgow, and you know, and it was Wormley, and they've got freshmen that come in, and they just picked it right up. So they rolled seven deep last year with excellent defensive linemen. So I think all these guys have a chance to be good pros.
As the proud owner of the self-proclaimed worst mock drafts ever, Steve, give me your prediction for the New York Football Giants at 23.
Oh, man, I have the worst mock every single time out, and we're only trying to get better. You can only get better from the worst mock ever. I think my final – oh, man, what's my final prediction going to be? I'll go Zach Cunningham. I know, do they finally break it? Do they finally go linebacker? But I just look at that position as a position of weakness over the last many, many years for the Giants, and I look at the NFL these days and I say a three-down linebacker is more valuable than ever. I would love to see Cunningham with the Giants adding another piece to that defense that made such great strides last season.
All right, Steve, tell the folks one more time how to get PFF Draft Pass.
Yeah, it's at profootballfocus.com/draftpass17, and I have the very special promo code. You can get it for $5 off if you use the promo code PFF Steve. That's PFF Steve. You get $5 off. It is the deepest draft guide you could find on the internet. Stats about 100,000 players in the draft class, 250-plus player profiles, stuff you can't find anywhere else. You get a downloadable PDF, and you get online access. It's everything you need for the NFL draft.
And you can follow him at PFF_Steve on Twitter. And by the way, folks, he said it's the deepest. He ain't lying. 609 pages. Bring it. Pro Football Focus's draft guide.
He sprained his arm just bringing it into the studio.
I tell you what, I have a bum hand. It's actually hard carrying this thing around.
Printed copy. How much did that cost? I need to print a couple out.
Luckily, we have club resources for those things, Steve, and I appreciate that. Thanks, man. I appreciate the time, Steve, and we'll catch up to you after
the
draft.
Thank you, Steve.
All right?
All right. Thanks, guys.
Steve Palazzolo does a fantastic job for Pro Football Focus and great information there, as always. And by the way, I'm not lying. I looked at the last page. It says 608.
Oh, I know you did. I just saw it. And this is a lot of trees right there. A lot of trees. You know, it's funny, though, John. No matter how much we try to break it down into an exact science.
Oh, no.
And everybody will try to do that. And now it's being done more than it's ever been done before.
It's an industry.
But the point is, no matter how exact the science is, as Bill Polian, the Hall of Fame front office executive, has said, you're probably only going to hit on a 30 of picks anyway.
And that's why it's not a science.
Exactly.
No, you're 100% right. It is not a science. It's an art, and it's an inexact art. And I know the people that do this for a living would probably come down here and slap me around because they work so hard at it, but it's educated guesswork.
They admit to that.
And I will make this the opportunity to give my yearly speech on this.
Yes.
You're trying to predict how a 20-year-old young man, I'm not going to call him a boy, I'm not going to call him a man, he's somewhere in between the two of them, how a 20-year-old young man is going to develop into a man. Parents have trouble figuring out how their own kids going to turn out in 10 years. You're trying to figure out how a kid that you look at on tape, interview for some kids 20 to 30 minutes, and you're trying to predict what type of man this kid's going to become in 3 or 4 years. It's hard. It's really, really hard.
And worse than that, John, unlike many years ago when it was the medical and then the pro football evaluators, nowadays you also have the background check evaluators too.
Yes.
So you have such a multiple level of folders in each guy's portfolio that he's got to be able to get through before he becomes the pick. And no matter what round it is, I'm only going to say this. I would have a case full of Excedrin in my drawer if I were in that draft room making those picks. As much fun as we have here doing what we do, to be in that room on draft day and having to make those picks, that's a lot of pressure.
And next to those pills, I'd have a couple four-leaf clovers. I'd have a couple rabbit foots. And I'd say a couple prayers before I walked into the draft room as well, because you can do all the work you want. You can be really good at it. You also need a little bit of luck.
You do. You do. And then how about when you think you're a couple of picks away and the guy you want's going to be there? I mean, I know as just a media guy and as a fan, what happens to me when a guy is taken from my very grasp moments before the pick comes up on the board, and it's like, oh, you kicked me in the stomach.
Well, that's why you have your board and you go to the next guy.
That's
what the Giants do. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Your phone calls the rest of the way right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's go to Jim in Alabama. He's been holding since the start of the show. Jim, how are you, buddy? Jim going once. Jim going twice. Matt, put Jim back on hold. We'll try him again. Maybe he'll pat back on there. Let's go to Maurice in Montclair. He is the beneficiary of Jim's absence. Hello, Mr. Maurice.
Hey, what's up, gentlemen?
How are you?
Hey, doing pretty good, man. I was just listening to the guy that you guys had on. If my memory serves me correct, was Carl Banks the last linebacker drafted in the first round for the Giants?
Yes, he was.
84.
Wow. And so I was just sitting here listening to the guy and thinking to myself, I had told one of my friends that I see B.J. Goodson taking a big step in his second year. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, B.J. is more of a first and second down guy. What do you guys think about that?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. So my other thought I had was, I think unanimously around the Giants community, if O.J. Howard was on the board, the Giants would take him. And let's just say Ojoku and Howard was gone. Where do you guys see Bucky Hodges rank between tight ends that's coming up?
You know, Bucky Hodges is interesting. He's got that great straight-ahead speed that we've all talked about. And after you get past those first couple tight ends, I know some people actually have Evan Engram listed as a wide receiver and not a tight end based on kind of what he did in the college ranks. And, you know, Hodges is with that next group. I think it depends what you value. If you value more of a receiver, I think you're going to like Hodges because he really didn't do any blocking in college, and he did no on-the-line work. He was split outside all the time.
Correct.
So if you're looking for simply a receiver, he's a guy you could look at. If you want somebody to block at all, he's not a guy you're going to be interested in.
I think it really depends on the scheme and the personnel you already have. This is one of those cases where you want to fit a square peg into a square hole. And if you're going to look at one of these, quote, look, he's more like Eric Ebron, okay? Who, as you know, John, for me, he was so much of a receiving tight end that I didn't think he'd be a good fit for the Giants at all. Look, my second group of tight ends, after Howard and Njoku, I don't like Ingram at all. To me, again, he's a wide receiver. He would not fit for me at tight end.
And I get that.
I'm big for Butt.
Yep.
I'm big for Everett, and I'm big for Kittle. To me, that's the next cluster behind the top two guys at tight end who would fit what I like and what I think the Giants would be able to use in their scheme.
Got it. Well, I just want to kind of end with this with a couple of thoughts. I think that the Giants last year under McAdoo did a good job as far as bringing a lot of talent in and letting the talent, you know, decide for itself, meaning by competition. I don't see and I don't think that Roger Lewis and Tavares King can just sit back comfortably. I think they will have to go out and try and prove it again that these guys deserve to be on a roster. And I also think that the Giants, you know, I would like to see, if Kelvin Shepard is hanging around, you know, maybe just bring him to camp. I'm not sure what the Giants are going to do in the draft room. You know, that'll have an effect on things. And I just want to leave you guys with a fact or fiction. I like doing this to you guys. Let you guys think a little bit.
Okay.
Fact or fiction. I'll give you two. Fact or fiction, the first one. Brandon Marshall will have more touchdowns but less yards than Sterling Shepard. And the second fact of fiction is Olivier Vernon will have more tackles and more sacks than JPP. I'll take it off the air.
Thank you. I will go fact on the second one. I think Olivier Vernon will have more tackles and more sacks than Jason Pierre-Paul, only because I feel like he's healthy more and he'll probably play some more snaps and maybe play a few more games. So I'll go fact on that one. I think Vernon will get the double-digit sacks this year, in my opinion. And I will go with fiction on the first one because I think Brandon Marshall will have both more touchdowns and more yards than Sterling Shepard.
Wow. Two very good questions.
They are very good questions.
Does he want your job?
I might actually steal those and use them on Fact or Fiction next week and make Meadow answer them.
as difficult as they are, I might actually go both opposites.
Really? Interesting.
By a sliver, and I'm not sold or convinced of either answer.
No, it's close. Absolutely.
They're not easy ones at all, but I'm probably going to go the other way. I do think that that Marshall, with his size and his ability to be a tremendous red zone threat, and the Giants, that's what they got him for. They got him to be able to have the big catch radius, especially in the red zone. I think he will lead the Giants in touchdown catches this season.
But you think Shepard will have more yards?
I think that's entirely possible and that's why I'm going to lean towards that way, because I think that he's going to draw a lot of coverage, mm-hmm. and obviously Odell draws a lot of coverage. To me, that's going to open things up more for the slot guy.
Yeah.
And how many third corners in this league can really cover Sterling Shepard effectively one-on-one out of the slot?
Fair. And now, why do you think JBP will have more sacks or more tackles than Vernon?
Well, yeah, he's asking for both categories. And anytime you have a two-category fact or fiction, your odds are better if you're going to go the other way.
That's true.
So that's first. That's mathematics.
True. I agree.
But the other thing is, I think that teams still are strong side right running teams. So you're going to see more running plays towards JPP's side by the very nature of the game. More right-handed quarterbacks, more runs that way. So I think that JPP will have more tackles than Olivier Vernon. Maybe not more sacks, but I think he'll have more tackles.
Do you know what the numbers were last year? Obviously, Vernon finished more busy playing all
60
games.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, that's...
But if you go by a per-game basis, let me see if I can break that down here. Hold on one second.
Well, yeah, if you break it down per game, I'm not sure exactly where it would
land. I'm curious. I honestly don't know what the answer is to that question, but why don't we find out?
But I would say, because of the tackles, I'm going to go JPP with the small
All right, this is according to Giants.com stats, okay? Let's see. How they always go automatically to the playoff stats. It's so annoying. As I click over to regular season stats, I don't know why they do that. Who wants to look at playoff stats? Here we go. Defensive stats over the course of the year. JPP played in how many games? 11?
Yeah.
He had 53 tackles in 11 games.
Okay. Just about five a game.
And in 16 games, Vernon just had 63. So you're right. JPP did average more per game.
he's going to have more runs to his side. That's a given.
Yeah. So maybe you're right. We'll see. I have another guy. One tight end you didn't mention. We haven't really talked about him much on the show.
Yeah.
At least not when I've been on with you. So I'm curious to see what you think of him.
That D2 guy, Ashland.
278, Paul.
I knew you were going to say that.
He's a big boy.
And I didn't even have to look at your board. I knew you were going to say that. I have such a problem with him, and it was first of all, it was hard to get tape on him, by the way. I did search YouTube because I couldn't get anybody else to get me tape on him, and I looked at YouTube, and I did see a bunch of clips. What you see is a man among boys.
Correct.
The level of competition makes it, for me, impossible to grade him. I know Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network is insisting he's going to be right up there in the first five tight ends taken. Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand that. I just don't know how I can grade him. Here's what I said yesterday to Lance. Remember when Anthony Doble came over from Europe last year?
Yes.
He looked like Jerry Rice when you looked at the tape of him playing the European club teams that he was
mm-hmm.
playing.
That's true.
Okay? Ramsey Barden looked like Jerry Rice when you looked at his college tape and he played that very light level of competition when he's 5 inches taller than every corner he's going against, and he's running go routes, and he's running fades, and he's running corner routes, and they're barely getting up to his shoulder, and he is destroying them. And it's easy to say, oh, wow, I got fooled on that one. I bet. And I didn't take the level of comp into consideration, and I thought Ramsey Barden was going to be a better player at the pro level. I was wrong, okay, for a lot of reasons. We'll leave that aside. I don't want to get fooled by the Ashland kid now. That's where I stand.
201-939-4513. Matt, let's try Jim in Alabama one more time. Jim, you're back with us.
Hey, guys. Great show. Love when you have Steve on. That was really good.
Thank you.
I got a comment on just draft strategy and then a question about free agency and how it intersects with the draft.
Sure.
The comment is that I reached out to Paul on Twitter and asked him, hey, compared to other years, how good is our roster looking right now? And he said, best since 2012. And Ralph Vecchiano commented on the show when you guys had him on at the Combine that the Giants really need to draft best player available because their roster is relatively complete right now. And I want to see the Giants really stick to that strategy this year. I think in times past they really haven't. When they trade up to get Landon Collins or Ryan Nassib, they kind of betray that they're really not totally going best player available. But I would rather see him take a cornerback or a D lineman or a defensive end specifically than try to fill a hole in reach for Bowles or Cam Robinson. So in terms of the question, we've got some money left on the table right now that we didn't pay Hank. And how if you guys are the GM, how would you spend that money? And would you use it before the draft to try to fill a hole so you don't have to reach on draft day? Or would you use it on the back end, specifically on some gaps I think we have right now, maybe at that power back or at that swing tackle that we seem to be missing? Guys out there like Austin Pastor or LeGarrette Blount could be good fits for us even before the draft so we don't have to reach. And I'll take your comment off the air. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jim. I would do it this way. I would follow your strategy for the draft and pick the best guy. Now, I'm going to let need come in a little bit now. I'm not going to pick best available no matter what because I think some of these guys, you would like to try to help put you over the top this year because you're trying to make a run. So,
no doubt.
I would put need into it a little bit. But I also wouldn't go off my board to pick a position in need either or pick a second-round guy in the first round just because you need him. So that's how I would measure that. Number two, I would wait till after the draft and see what you need once all is said and done. Because the worst thing you want to do is, you know, go pay, you know, in theory, LeGarrette Blount. Then all of a sudden, Samaje Perine, you know, sits there in the third round, and then you already have LeGarrette Blount. What's the point? So I don't want to get myself in that situation, so I would save my money for after the draft. And you know what? You might get to the point where you're like, I don't need to spend all this. And if that's the case, you use that to spend out to pay out performance bonuses over the course of the year, which you have to save money for. You use that to pay your draft class. And if you carry over a few million to next year to try to extend guys like Richburg or Pugh and, you know, extend guys like Beckham and Landon Collins, that's fine. I got no problem with that. So I would not be in a rush to spend that money.
Yeah, I agree with John. I would not think that any veteran guys off the street are going to be signed in the next week because I think most teams feel that way. And the other thing you have to consider, too, if you're a veteran free agent And you want to make the best situation that you could possibly have to land. Well, why would you necessarily sign somewhere now when after the draft you think a team might be looking to fill a hole and you could squeeze a little more out of them?
That's true.
Why would you sign now? You know, you're not going to be able to get that extra dime or quarter. It's not going to be much, but you might get a little extra. You might even get a little signing bonus out of it if you squeeze them after the draft. So it doesn't make sense for a player to do it. And I think the answer to your first question, I think there are so many positions that have make-it players that I understand what John is saying, and I agree with that, but I'm going to add another piece to that puzzle. If there are four rounds deep of tight ends, if there are four rounds deep of secondary guys, if there are four rounds deep of defensive linemen, if there are four rounds deep of make-it running backs, you know what? You're going to tell me, take best player available. I'm going to tell you the best player available could be at one of any four positions in the fourth round.
Right, and you know what? You make a good point. Yeah, you pick best player available, but if you know you can get a player that's only slightly worse two rounds later, why do you then pick a player that same position in the first round?
Yeah, so to me, you know, you look at the depth of the draft, you look at the needs you have, you look at the best player available, and quite frankly, I think in a lot of cases, at least in the first 2 days for sure, maybe even the start of the fourth round on the third day, a lot of those roads are going to converge, and it's not going to be hard for you to pick the best guy because there is going to be that much depth, and it's going to be, fortunately for the Giants, likely at a position that you want to help.
201-939-4513. Shakes is in Baltimore. What's going on, Shakes?
What's going on, fellas?
How are you, Shakes? We're doing well. How are you?
It's been a while. I haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks.
Man. I'm fine, man. How y'all doing?
Doing great.
Marvelous, marvelous.
All right. So I got a couple of things here. Now, y'all know that I love my linebackers.
Yep.
Right? I've been saying this since I've been calling here. Now, I love these linebackers that's in the draft. Reuben Foster, Sean Raddick, Jared Davis, Zach Cunningham. Either one would be good in blue. My thing is, I want y'all also know that I love the special players. I love the splash.
I know that.
So, y'all have to know that. I've been saying it for years.
Yes, sir.
So, my thing is this. Now, I know the reports on Mixon is, you know, teams are starting to like him, and he might creep up in the first round.
Oh, well, you know what, Jake? It's funny you say that. There was also a report, and I think Pro Football Talk had it yesterday.
Let me take a look.
Somebody had the report, and they said that teams are so scared off by him that he might not be there until the third or fourth round. They might not get picked until.
Oh, here it is. Here it is.
Yeah, you have it there, right, Paul? Was it Pro Football Talk? Am I right about that, or was it somebody else?
Senior high school allegation against Joe Mixon. This is a – oh, we recanted.
Oh, okay.
That just happened. So maybe we should just leave that alone for the time being.
Yeah.
The bottom line is there's a lot of stuff – in his personal profile that's going to make a lot of people uneasy, and there are a lot of teams that won't touch him, period. That we know. That we could tell you.
All right, but my point wasn't even about Mixon. I have a whole other soliloquy on Mixon, but I'm not going to go there. But my point was for Cook. Now, I believe that Cook will be there for us at 23, and I believe if he is there for us at 23, we go get him. Now, I say that, right? And I totally agree with you, P-Dot. I believe that we do need to bring in some hard-nosed football back to the Giants organization.
Right.
I think we do need the goal line and short yardage back. I do think we need a power back to go into the system. So the pre-Rhines and the Foremans or the Connors is good.
Okay.
But if you can get a Cook, like, that's a special player to me. And you got to grab him up. And in this system where they ask our running backs to be versatile, I think he will blend well with Perkins and giving Perkins 12 to 15 times carries a game, as well as Cook around the same range. So you share the ball with them, and then you got Vereen in there for third down backs. I think that works for us. What do y'all think about that?
All right, Shakes, I'm going to throw a question back at you, and I appreciate the opinion. And there are some people who do think Cook could drop there and should be considered. But let's say that Reddick is there at 23, Cook is there at 23, Njoku's there at 23, Cunningham is there at 23. It's not totally out of the question. At least some of those other guys could be there on the board at the same time. Are you still making Cook your priority?
I believe so. And I'm not saying that those other guys are not special players neither, but when you can get a dynamic back like a Cook, I'm going to just say a quick story real quick. Y'all know I'm a Hurricane fan. If y'all didn't know, now y'all know. So I'm a big Miami Hurricane fan. And I try to watch the game with my nephew just to teach him the game of football.
Right.
And we watching the Hurricanes in the Florida State game. And Cook is killing us. Number four is what we called him, me and my nephew. So I didn't know him at the time. So I'm watching this kid, and this kid is killing us. I mean, he's absolutely killing us. And I look over at my nephew, and my nephew looks at me, and he says, number four is a beast. That's what my nephew said. He was 7 years old at the time. He said, number four is a beast. This is who we need to bring in. This is what I'm saying.
You know, Shakes, it's funny. I'm torn on it. And here's the thing. I think Dalvin Cook, when all said and done, will be the best pure running back in the class. I think McCaffrey will be as good of a player, but he'll be as good of a player in a different way, being also used as a wide receiver as well as a running back. I would take Cook before I take Leonard Fournette. That's me. I think in today's NFL, he's a more well-rounded player. So, I believe that Paul Perkins is a very good running back. And I would not pick Cook there, not because I don't think Cook is really, really good. And frankly, if I'm starting a team from scratch, right, and I got a choice between Cook and Cunningham and Jared Davis and Ramchick, I'm going to take Dalvin Cook. I think he's the best football player of that group of guys. And frankly, I'll probably even pick him over Njoku if I have a blank slate. And I'm saying I'm picking the best player, period. I'm going to take Cook over those guys. But because of Perkins and what I think he can do, do I think Paul Perkins is as good as Dalvin Cook? No, probably not. But I think he is close enough where I would rather use the resource of a first-round pick on a guy like Njoku, because I think Njoku's a bigger upgrade as a pass catcher, a tight end, than what's on the roster, than Dalvin Cook is to Paul Perkins as a running back who's already on the roster. So while Cook might be a better pro than Njoku, he has more value to the Giants because of the upgrade you're getting at that particular position.
Shakes, what he's trying to tell you is, if you're picking a bubble, Cook may be your guy, but you're not picking in a bubble.
Yeah, I get what he's saying. And this is what I'm also going to say, and I'm going to say something else before I go, and I'm sorry to take up a little bit more time. But I'm with P-Dot. I don't like the one-dimensional tight end. I don't want the wide receiver just slot guy. You got to be half offensive lineman, half wide receiver.
And Joku can block, Shakes. And Joku can block. He can block, I'm telling you.
I don't know. I don't trust his blocking. I think he still needs a lot of work at that.
No, he needs work, but I think he's physically capable of doing it.
There is some projection required in that area, but he did line up in line as a tight end with the Miami Hurricanes many times this year, and
he
showed effort.
He didn't shy away from
contact. He showed effort.
Correct, yes.
He showed effort, so I think that's something now. If a guy has that in him, all you got to do is coach up his technique, add a little power to him, and he could turn out to be really good at it. And I think he at least shows enough, as opposed to a guy like Ingram, who just wants to line up in the slot all day. And look, I think his chances of throwing a block on somebody are about as good as an Eskimo buying ice from you tomorrow. You know, he's just not going to want to do it. That's not what he's built to do.
What if he's having a party and needs some nice crushed ice?
Anyway.
All right, and my last thing I wanted to say before I take it off air, and I appreciate you, fellas.
Yep.
Jonathan Hankins, I wanted to touch on this. I understand that he got more money and he left to go to the Colts. And, you know, money talks. I understand all that. But my assumption is this. If you're a New York football giant, right, and your heart is in this organization, and a team gives you a little bit more money, I mean, it's a significant amount, but a team gives you a little bit more money, but the team that your heart is with is giving you enough money to come back. They didn't lowball you. They gave you enough money, and you didn't decide to come back. So to me, he was never a giant in heart. That's how I feel. And I appreciate you, fellas, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Shakes. And by the way, I'll say this, I understand what you're saying, but there's a good chance, just because of the nature of football, this is the only big long-term contract that Jonathan Hankins is going to get.
Yes.
And when all is said and done,
potentially.
Again, there's a decent chance, and I think if you're Jonathan Hankins, you have to approach it that way. Because there are no guarantees after that. You hope that that you get another contract. He's still a young man, but you don't know.
You don't know.
And when all is said and done, if over the course of the contract, and at his age, there's a good chance he's going to play out that full 4 years of that contract.
One would think so.
You know?
Although he's already had some injuries.
And again, I don't know what the Giants' offer was, but let's just say, I'll throw out a random number. Let's say there's
Don't even do that. Just say it was a reasonable number based on his stature within the team.
But all I'm saying is that if the increase over the length of the contract, even if it's only a couple million more per year, it's going to work out to, you know, 8 to 12 million over the course of the contract, and that is a significant amount of money if that's going to be the one big contract you're going to get over the course of your career. And I understand why. Look, it's a business. Money talks. Shakes, you said it at the start of your comment. Money talks. It's just the way it is. That's business.
Although in my wallet, it's a whisper.
Wow, you were just throwing out the bad puns like a madman the last 10 minutes.
Do we have another call? Before we do that, can we just do this real quick?
Let me do Mike in Boston quick, and then you can do this.
Okay, good idea.
Mike in Boston, wrap us up, pal. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, buddy?
Thank you, mate.
Thank you.
Hey, I was just, I was driving from Boston to New York today, and I was listening to yesterday's episode and talking about the tight ends. I know it came up again today. I'm on board with exactly what Paul said. I've actually had this conversation with a few people where there's those two, Howard and Njoku, in the first round, but after that I would kind of skip maybe to even the third round, and I'm looking at George Kittle's. Shaheen is kind of that wild card. The one of the questions I had, though, is with regards to Gerald Everett. I know he came in at like 220-ish pounds at one point. I know other times he's weighed in at, around 240. How do you feel about a guy like him who's dropped down so low in weight as far as blocking goes, as far as a tight end that could potentially be a blocker?
You know, it's funny.
I know on tape he's very good and aggressive. Go ahead, sorry.
No, it's okay. You know, it's funny. I've gotten different opinions, and I've talked to different people, and some people think Ingram can be a blocker, and some people are like Paul and think he has no shot. Some people think Everett is not going to be a good blocker, and he's going to be a receiver. Some people think he can do it. And you remember, South Alabama is not exactly, a power, four conference school here either. So, I mean, there are such varying opinions on the two guys, and this is how I look at it. I'm kind of with you. Once I get past the first round with Howard and Njoku, I don't think I would pick a tight end in round two. I think I would wait till round three, see who's there, and then take a look at who's there, and then maybe if I think somebody's good enough, I'd go there in round three or four.
See, Everett's played enough of inline tight end for me, and he shows some feistiness when he plays that makes me believe
that
he's willing to be a run blocker here at this level. Even if he's got to get a little stronger, I see enough of that. There's some evidence there for me, and I like to look at guys and say, is there evidence? Show me something about what you're going to do or what we're going to ask you to do. I don't see that with Ingram. It's a pure projection, and that doesn't make me feel good.
I've seen that on the tapes, too. He's very aggressive. With Ingram, what I would think is, I think he's around 220. He's got the height, to be a red zone threat. He's fast. I think he ran 4.4 or something like that.
Yeah, he's in the 4.4s.
We have Brandon Marshall, so I don't see the value for us. But, I mean, another team who might be looking for a wide receiver might, see some value there. But in the second round, what do you think about Sidney Jones from Washington, the corner, you know, obviously towards Achilles. Obviously,
yeah.
We don't need, another corner right now. And he's certainly a little bit different. You know, he's taller, he's bigger, he's not the same type of corner as, you know, let's say DRC, who we have in the slot right now. But maybe someone to groom for down the road for a little bit of depth. I don't know if he'd be available, you know, late in the season, come playoff time. What do you think about someone like him for a second-round pick?
It's a great question. I mean, Sidney Jones claims he's going to be ready for training camp, and I'll believe it when I see it. And thanks a lot for the call, man. We got to run. We're past 1 o'clock.
Sure.
You know, I think it'll be real interesting to see where he goes because he was probably a top three corner or maybe top corner
tremendous
in the draft
skill set.
Before
no question.
He tore his Achilles at his pro day workout. See, Achilles scare me. Because Achilles can have a long-term debilitating effect. I mean, he might run a tenth of a second slower on his 40 time for the rest of his life because of that Achilles injury. You lose that much explosiveness sometimes. It happens. We've seen it in the NFL a million times before with these guys with these Achilles injuries. So,
John, make it easy on yourself.
Would I go there in the second round?
Make it easy on yourself. His name comes up on the board. First thing that happens, everybody turns to the medical staff and says, what do you guys think? That's the ultimate decision right there. Because if they have any trepidation at all, you're passing on.
Well, how about this? Let's say I'm telling you already he's going to be able to play. He'll have to pop him. He's not going to show up on your roster to play games until week 8. And who knows how effective he's going to be as a rookie. When's the earliest you draft him?
Third?
I agree. I think that's fair. Not sure I would go second.
There are so many other naked corners in this draft. Someone's going to help you now.
Yeah, I agree. All right, give me the Kiper mock draft.
Real quick, Mel Kiper just put out his new mock draft. He's got 3 rounds for the Giants. He's got Charles Harris, the defensive end, the tweener defensive end out of Missouri in the first round. He's got the second round pick of the Giants becoming Marcus Williams, the safety out of Utah.
He's a really good player, but I don't see the fit. Right.
Don't see it. And how many other players is he passing up to take him? I don't even want to think about that list right now. Third round, Samaje Perine out of Oklahoma. He's got him dropping to the third like Steve does. And for that, Mel, you get a big hug from me.
No wonder you got so excited about that. And I saw the first 2 picks. I was wondering why you're so pumped up. And then I guess the third one.
Says it all.
All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Tomorrow we have a special time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. It's 1:30. We have player availability, and then we have Jerry Reese's press conference. So we'll cover the press conference live on Giants.com. And then to give us a little bit of a cushion, Big Blue Kickoff will hit at 1:30. We'll have Dan Shanka, former NFL scout, now with OurLads.com.
He's great.
It'll be Paul Dottino and Lance Medel 1:30 tomorrow, and then we'll be back at noon for this week and all week next week. And we should also point out we are going to have our special Friday night of the draft, Big Blue Kickoff Live, next Friday at 7 p.m. For the second and third rounds of the draft, and Paul and I will do our best to keep you awake until the Giants pick in round number 3.
I'll be awake.
For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow. Again, 1:30, special start time tomorrow on Giants.com for Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll see you then. Thanks for joining us.